Okay, welcome everyone that's joined already. We're going to give it another 30 seconds or so before we get going. Good to have you, and bear with us, won't be long before we kick off. Okay, I think we are ready to roll. So welcome everybody to session number three in the series with Shell Foundation on leading through the COVID-19 crisis. Today we're focusing on leadership of self and team through the crisis. So Emma, do you want to perhaps say a brief introductory word?
Yes, just to say thank you for the previous sessions that you've run, Jason. We've really appreciated them, and we've had really positive feedback from our partners on the value that that's provided. We're really looking forward to the session today, focused around care, focused around helping to support CEOs to lead through crisis. We know that this is a very challenging time, for many on this call, and we're looking to do what we can to support our portfolio. And to learn from each other as well during this process. So I'd like to thank Karen Miller from Factor 10, who's part of the conversation today and part of the panel, and for the work that she's done in supporting CEOs through crisis situations across Africa. And we're really glad to have her on this call. And thank you, Jason, for setting this up and leading the work that you've done through 10X and the kind of support that you've provided. So I'll pass over to you for now, and we'll do a short sum up at the end, and really look forward to the conversation. Thank you.
Great, perfect. Thank you, Aman. Welcome, Karen. Great to have you again. And so, with no further ado, let's dive in. Leading self and team through COVID-19. I'm a founder. I have burnt myself out twice, very badly. I understand the world we live in well, and I share a journey with many entrepreneurs. And I know one of the things we hold in common as entrepreneurs is we come last. We suffer a lot for everyone around us and take least care of ourselves and to the detriment of our teams and our businesses. And so today we're going to talk about some hacks that are very powerful to help us do a better job of leading self and team through this crisis. Okay, so briefly, just set the scene on backdrop. I'll highlight some content within the leadership field guide that is already there to help. And it's world-leading, cutting-edge content, mostly provided by Karen and her team on how to lead self and team through this crisis. I'll just spotlight that, and then we'll get into where we're going to spend most of the time, which is question and answer. And that's where you get your opportunity to pose your most challenging leadership scenarios and questions to primarily Karen. I'll chip in a few thoughts here and there. And then we'll close out at the end of the hour. We'll do, as usual, a couple of polls as I go through the content in the field guide and just baseline the field. And you get the opportunity again to baseline how you're approaching particular issues relative to your peer group on this call. So that's what we'll do. Again, this is the third in the series. For those of you who missed them, I believe Shell has got an internal site you have access to where the recordings of the previous sessions are there. Session one, managing liquidity and scenario planning. And last week, or 2 weeks ago, managing capital and managing investors. This week, as I said, leading self and team through the crisis. And in 2 weeks' time, we'll be focusing on finding your new north, how you think about setting strategy for the future, the as yet unknown, uncertain future we're heading into. So that will be in 2 weeks' time. Both speakers have been introduced. You can find in the chat box in a moment a link to the bios, particularly of Karen, who's our new panelist. And you're going to really enjoy the deep insight and experience Karen brings to the table. Rules of engagement, very simple. This is mostly meant to be interactive. So, I'll spend a little bit of time headlining content in the leadership field guide that's there for you, including tools. But mostly we want to run the polls, and then we want to do Q&A, and we would like you to post your questions. So we've got a couple of preloaded questions as usual, and we'll start with those. But please do load your most difficult leadership scenarios and questions that you're facing. Okay, so with that, and with no further ado, let's dive into the complex, messy world of leading self and team through this extremely difficult time. And I don't know how many of you are tempted to live through it this way, but I certainly am. I thought I could get through my college thesis on Coca-Cola. I did, but it didn't work out well. And I've tried to take the same approach at times to my entrepreneurial journey. And I guess life has taught me that caring for self sometimes is caring for others and the business. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. So let's dive into the field guide. Just a brief recap on what is in the field guide. It aims to provide you with a holistic step-by-step journey to lead through the crisis at three layers. The obvious layer of steering the ship, or leading the enterprise, and then the slightly less obvious layer of leading your team, but the least obvious layer being leading self. And to help you at those three layers through the four phases of this crisis. And at this point, most of us are in the survive the storm phase, navigate the uncertainty, fight it out, we'll bounce back on the other side. And some of us are already in the set new course phase. And with all of that in mind, we've had now months of hardship, uncertainty, tough decisions, tough conversations to navigate. We probably approached that like a little bit of a sprint up front, starting to realize it's a marathon, maybe felt tired a few weeks ago, maybe feeling very tired, exhausted now, wondering where to take a break. And in all of that context, obviously, our own wellness is a key to the business doing well through and on the other side of this. And so the Leadership Field Guide provides you with content and tools on leading at those three layers. And I won't spend much time on this, but there obviously is a bunch of stuff on leading the enterprise, from strategy to how you reopen a work plan, how you raise capital. That's spent the last two sessions on. But now we're shifting gear onto layer two, team leadership and self-leadership. So I just want to briefly spotlight the content, at those two layers. So let's start with team leadership. What you'll find in the field guide is a strong emphasis on helping you position your team to be able to lead the enterprise through this crisis. Understanding this is not a usual climate in which your team has to be well prepared emotionally and psychologically to lead. And your team really does need to be emotionally and psychologically prepared to lead. And arriving at the office exhausted, worrying about kids and their curriculum at school and how they're going to get through that with exams in 2 weeks' time, it's not a really good space from which to be able to lead your team through a burning burning house. And so there's a big focus on bracing your team for what's to come. And maybe you've already had to do that. And there's a great article Karen has written on how do you brace your team for what's to come and help them prepare themselves emotionally and psychologically for what's to come with some tools. Then secondly, this is a time where there's a lot of change happening every week. How do you keep your team aligned on what matters and what we're doing through a crisis like this? And there are, management tools. Those are more covered under manage the enterprise, like having a task team and a particular rhythm around a task team meeting and a particular approach that keeps you aligned. But then there are the softer elements, of how you as a CEO communicate and how you engage your team. And so there's a great article around getting your team aligned, and keeping them aligned. And there are some useful tools for that too. Thirdly, there's how do you start to prepare, your team to be thinking beyond the storm? So yes, we're weathering a storm and fighting it out. And, majority of our capacity is focused on getting through this. But how do we start to prepare ourselves mentally and emotionally for the other side of the storm and position ourselves well for that? And again, some very useful tools, particularly focusing on the psychological and emotional layers, which are the underpin, they support, the business to be able to pursue the opportunities that lie on the other side of this. And then fourthly, many of us are going to have to communicate bad news, and some of it traumatic news. Some of us are going to have to let go of staff, sometimes entire teams. Some businesses are actually just furloughing the business, shutting the business down until the storm passes. And, the load the psychological load of having to communicate what is devastating news to individuals who themselves are sometimes breadwinners, supporting households and so on, that is an immense weight on us as leaders. And just preparing for those conversations, those tough conversations, is just another very important thing to do well. And again, there are very powerful tools for that. So that's a spotlight on some of the content on the team leadership level. And then switching gears now to some of the content and tools on the individual self-leadership layer. So this is now me turning the mirror inward on me, the leader, and my wellness and how well I'm positioned to lead my team and the organization. I want to spotlight five big ideas and related tools in the area of leading self So number one is shifting your mindset. So this probably relates to what most of us should have done a couple of weeks or months back, which is just preparing ourselves for the leading through a very different world of uncertainty and risk and loss, and consciously shifting our mindsets through a couple of very specific mental shifts that we need to be well positioned to lead. And so there's a great article on that explaining those mental shifts, listing them. And there's a tool to just kind of consciously baseline yourself on where you're at in each of those mental shifts, and then plan actions to consciously manage each of those shifts. And frankly, this may be one of the most important things you do on this leadership journey. We'll come back to that idea in a moment. So that's number one. Number two is managing your own well-being. And we'll double click a little bit on some of these most important ideas in a moment. But you know, behind the tools for managing your well-being is the philosophy that your team needs to bring their A game at a time where it's very hard to bring the A game, and that's going to require extraordinary leadership. And extraordinary leadership is very difficult when you're just feeling crappy all day, which is what happens when we're not taking care of ourselves. And so managing our own well-being might be one of the biggest levers to positioning the business to come out this the other side well. And again, there are very concrete practices, and there's tools, again, in the field guide to help you manage your own well-being. Spotlight on this coming in a moment. One of the areas in which we need to, you know, manage our own well-being is managing the inner conversation or the inner storm, you know, the cloud of questions and uncertainty and arguments and fights and that clutter inside, which absorbs most of our emotional and psychological energy and distracts us from the job at hand of leading the company. And so one of the sets of tools is around quieting that inner storm, so that we're positioned to focus our energy, emotional, psychological, and physical energy on the jobs to be done. And there's a powerful set of practical tools to quiet that inner storm and shift energy to where it belongs. Number four is around how to brace yourself individually as the leader that's ultimately responsible for delivering bad news. And again, there's some advice and some tools. I mentioned this under team leadership because your team are going to have to deliver a lot of bad news. But, you know, you're probably going to have to be the central figure in delivering bad news to the organization. And so for that reason, there's a related, you know, article and tool around positioning yourself personally to, you know, deliver bad news. And then fifthly, there's an article to help you understand the need and the how-to on building emotional resilience for what's going to be a marathon journey of lots of uncertainty, lots of, you know, negative outcomes, lots of losses to process, lots of bad news to deliver, lots of, you know, people with baggage that you're going to be supporting. And all of that is going to require enormous amounts of emotional resilience. And so there's some content to help you understand how to build emotional resilience, and then a practical tool again for you to apply to build that emotional resilience. As one of the delegates 2 weeks ago said, though, you know, we can give you the staircase. We can't pull you up the stairs. In the end, you're going to have to walk up the stairs. Unfortunately, there is no elevator for this. That just kind of takes you from the beginning to the end without any effort. All of this requires you choosing to go up those stairs one at a time. And so all the tools are there, and now it's for you to decide which of these do you need right now, and then to go and pull them out and use them. Let me spotlight just a few of these a little bit more, and then let's do a poll or two to baseline where we're at as a group. So that first tool I mentioned on self is mindset tool. The background to this is a philosophy that perhaps for many of us, and I'll use the personal over here, I am the biggest risk to the business. Me, because ultimately it's the big decisions we make or fail to make that will position the business well or poorly on the other side of this. And it's the psychology I approach those decisions or perhaps avoid those decisions, you know, that determines whether or not we will make those decisions. And so winning the inner game of having the right psychology with which I'm approaching the situation, for the business, for the team, and for myself, it might be the most important first thing to get right. And so that's the big idea behind the mindset tool. But, you know, the past is the past. The best thing I can do is position myself to help the company as it is into the best possible future rather than like an ideal future that's no longer possible that I have to let go of. Okay, so that's kind of the big idea behind the first tool that I shared. The wellness tool I've already kind of headlined. Here the big idea is, again, just that I can't bring great leadership to a team that has to lead the company if I'm just feeling crappy all day because my personal habits around self-care are really bad. And so the big self-care practices are just spotlighted in a tool for you to self-assess how I'm doing and then plan actions. Because frankly, if I'm completely ignoring good sleep habits, good eating habits, and getting my own love tank filled, I'm going to find it very hard to pour out, you know, for my team every day. So that's number two, just spotlighting. And so with that in mind, let's do the first two quick polls and just see where, you know, this group of folks are at in terms of self-wellness and, you know, managing our own mindset. The first poll asks the question, well, how well are you? If you were to just score yourself out of 10, where do you sit between 1 out of 10, which is I'm on my deathbed, and 10 out of 10, I've never been better as things stand today? So let's do a quick vote. Let's see kind of where this group is sitting. I'm going to give it another 20 seconds and close this one out, and then we'll see how well is this group doing. We normally see the middle of the bell curve at kind of score 6 or 7, with a couple doing really well and a couple are doing pretty badly. So let's see how this group lies. All right, so closing out in 3, 2, and 1. Okay, so the roughly half the group sits in 7, so stretched, compromising a few important wellness areas, but sustainable. And actually, that's a good sign because, my experiences with founders and CEOs, that's kind of the optimum point at through a extreme crisis that's very stretching. It's hard to be, 8, 9, 10, although we should push on for those scores, but it's really good you're not at 6 or below. 6, you can only manage for short sprints. So the next biggest group is actually at 6, pushing too hard, on the edge, not sustainable, will need a break soon. And I'd say that's not too bad to have the majority of the group by far in those two. We've got a smaller group between 8 and 10, and then a small group at burnt out badly. And so obviously, hopefully this is a alarm bell for those in the burnout phase, and we're at this point now going to plan an urgent sum of recharge, some version of that. But that's where we're at today. Okay, so let's do the second poll. Sorry, I didn't share the results there, did I? But for those of you who just want to see the results, here they are. If you want to grab a quick screen grab of these results, and then I'll move on to the next poll. Okay, poll number one. Poll number two, what are you doing around self-care? And we've just summarized this into 4 main things. This is multiple choice. Are you being intentional around connecting, particularly with loved ones, getting your love tanks charged? But then also, are you in individual interactions, making sure there's a personal connection? It's not all transactional and solving problems and dealing with conflict. Secondly, awareness of emotions. Are you conscientizing what's going on, you know, in this black box so that you can manage it? Are you routinely resting? Are you managing your energy and experimenting with how to do better? Which of these four things are you doing? Multiple choice again. Give it another 10 seconds and close out. Okay, closing out in 2 and 1. Sharing results. So by far, the most commonly used tool is awareness of emotions, which is possibly the most powerful as well. So well done. And then under half of the group doing each of the others, connection, routine rest, and energy management. So the good news on that is there's upside for wellness. None of those need to take actually a lot of time. And so, you know, it's quite easy to bank feeling better every day by just adding two or three things into your daily routine that employ some of those practices. Okay, so that's the second poll. Third poll, do you have some version of a care coach? This is a very simple one, yes or no. This is a person holding you accountable if you're kind of your wellness is at risk. So if you're at 7 or below, you have someone that's holding you accountable and you're checking in regularly and saying, this is how I'm doing and this is what I'm doing about it. And that is a person that that you really want to be living up to your commitments in front of. So if you say I'm going to do X, you'll do it. So closing out in 3, 2. Okay. So a handful have got some version of a care coach, mentor, someone they're accountable to and taking care of themselves. The majority don't. Again, that's low-hanging fruit. So you'll find that you're just better at the habits that make you feel better when there's someone you're accountable to, especially when you're in risk territory. Okay, so moving on from those polls to just headline two of the other elements of content, and then we'll do a poll on those and we'll shift into Q&A. So again, the big idea on the idea of quieting, or the tool of quieting the inner storm, is that if that inner storm is happening but you're not conscious of it, like you're going to see it kind of coming out in aggressive behavior, being confrontational, being negative, cynical, critical, and obviously leading from that space, you know, just injects a lot of negative energy into the organization. But also it doesn't help you make really good decisions. And now's the time with the premium on rapid good decision making. The other idea here is that all the time, you know, and energy spent subconsciously most of the time on those debates, arguments, worries in particular, is wasted energy. You're no better off at the end of all that worrying than you were at the start of all that worrying. And so the ability to repurpose that energy constructively by just quieting the storm and redirecting the energy is a very, very powerful self-leadership tool. And so there are some extremely basic, you know, easy for all of us to use and not really time intensive tools over here for us to do that, to quiet the inner storm and redirect energy. So that's the idea behind the quieting the inner storm and the tool related to that. And the building resilience, again, the idea here is this is a marathon. And if you are in 2 months' time completely exhausted and burnt out, making poor decisions and de-energizing your team through the way you show up every day, that doesn't help anyone, definitely doesn't help you. And so you need emotional resilience. You need to be real about the fact that we're going to be facing hardship for months and months, hard decisions, conflict, you know, difficult trade-offs to make, losses. It's much more of a negative emotional kind of norm than it was 3 months ago and before that. And we need this emotional resilience, and it's in our power to build more emotional resilience. And there are concrete ways to do that. And two of the very simple ones are, firstly, just to name the source of what's exhausting, depleting, and worrying. And then to reframe it and to see the positive, the opportunity, not reject or deny or ignore the negative and the hard, but actually to introduce balance into the picture and see the positive and be able to pursue the positive. So that's the idea and the tool. And with that in mind, let's do poll number 5. And we've got 2 more polls to do, and then we can dive into the Q&A. So poll number 4 is around, what is your single biggest wellness challenge right now? What is the source of, the main source of, holding your wellness back, kind of bringing your energy and general wellness down? Is it that you don't know what to do, that you have bad habits that are hard to kick now, that you don't have the time to do these things, that there are just like so many psychological pressures every day, it's just exhausting and wears you down and grinds you down? A copy paste on emotional pressures. Do you have insomnia, or is there something else? If you have none, by the way, that's fine. Just don't click any and close out the poll. And if you have multiple, pick the biggest one. This is a more complex question, so I'm going to give it another 10 seconds and then we'll close it out. Okay, so closing out in 2, 1. All right, sharing results. So it's actually quite diverse, but there are 3 big ones. The biggest by far is time, then it's bad habits, and then it's ongoing psychological pressures. The good news is the time one, is surmountable, because most of the tools that Karen has shared actually don't require a lot of time at all. And that's by intent, because this is a time where we don't have time. So many of these tools are a conscious choice, to do or not do. And, then you've got to lock in the habit, but they don't require an inordinate amount of additional time in any given day. So that's good news. And it means there is upside on your wellness. The bad habits are just, it's hard, and the psychological pressures aren't going to go away, which I guess, just ups the ante on doing the things that are within our control to do. All right, so that's poll number 5. And with that, we get to the Q&A. So what I'm going to do, we didn't do number 5. My apologies. Let's do number 5 quickly. Number 5 asks the question, which of these resources do you have in your support system to help you cope with the emotional and psychological pressures in particular? And this is multiple choice. So just click any of these that you do have, just close out the poll if you have none of them at all. And this is just to get a sense of what tools are you using as a peer community to manage your own wellness, particularly in the context of the emotional and psychological pressures entrepreneurs are facing and CEOs are facing at this time. At least one person lives by the beach. Good for you. Okay, another 10 seconds and then we'll close it out. Okay, 2, 1, and closing. By the way, I hope that these last 2 polls in particular have given you really good food for thought on questions to put to Karen, and we're about to shift in that gear in a moment. So the outcome here is, by far the largest support resource is Life Partner, which is great. The next largest, and they're quite close to each other, is being able to share with closest friends who understand. Having some kind of entrepreneurial peer network, like Entrepreneurs Organization, Strong Faith and Prayer Life, and Living by the Beach. Those are the next big 4. Okay, so great. That brings us to the Q&A, and we're going to kick off Q&A by asking you to vote for which of these 6 questions you most want to chat through. Could we ask you pick your top 3 and then close out your poll, and we'll start with the most popular question, and then please actually type out what questions you particularly would like us to focus on in the Q&A chat box. There's a Q&A button on the menu bar of the Zoom application, type them out there, and we'll tackle them one at a time. First come, first serve. But we'll just break the ice with the most popular question in this poll. So I'm going to close out this poll in 5 seconds. Okay, and closing. So good for you, those that got your vote in. And the most popular question to start with is, how do I stay sane in a time like this? No pressure, Karen.
Thanks, Jason. And yeah, thanks for positioning, I think, so many important insights through those polls. I think it's super useful for us to understand the context. I mean, I think the first thing is, and I keep saying this to my children and they're actually getting quite irritated with it, but the first thing is to understand that this feels hard because it is hard. So, you know, we are in unprecedented times. This is our war. And I think that as soon as we frame it like that, it gives us an insight, you know, that actually this is asking extraordinary things about ourselves. So resilience is obviously top of mind. I mean, we're working with clients, you know, across the continent around this concept of resilience. And I think that probably the most important thing, and a lot of you are already doing it in terms of that poll, is an awareness of our emotions and an awareness that actually we are going through a huge amount of loss at the moment. So the sense that, you know, that discomfort we're feeling is actually loss. And we're actually in a grief cycle where there are times when we may feel angry, when we may feel incredibly sad. So being aware of those emotions, giving ourselves permission to actually access them, which gives us data. And then as Jason said, one of the key sort of psychological levers is this concept of name it to tame it. So as soon as we know what we're feeling and we can actually give ourselves permission to say, wow, this is tough. It actually gives us a way of then moving through that emotion and onwards. But if we resist it, it actually pops out dysfunctionally or in toxic ways. So I think the first thing is permission for us to actually be human in all of this and to actually acknowledge that this is unprecedented, it's uncharted, and it is difficult times. I think the next thing is to really be quite pragmatic around our self-care. So Jay, you've really established the importance of those health habits. We've come up with, in the last few months, working with hundreds of leaders and founders, we've come up with an acronym, CARE, and then we've built onto it, then ACT. So I think the foundation is our own care. And I know that we've highlighted time is a problem and we're very kind of time constrained at the moment, but I really cannot emphasize enough that our businesses are only as resilient as we are. We actually are our business's biggest asset as leaders and founders. If we are not resilient, our business will not be resilient. Actually focusing on basic things that can make a big difference to us, and every conversation we're starting at the moment with leaders is around, how are you sleeping? How are you eating? Are you exercising? Are you hydrating? You know, are you making sure you're drinking glasses of water during the day? You know, those kind of basic practices, which we tend to let slip when we're in the storm. But in fact, those small things are what we need so that we're not running on empty. As you said, Jason, we're needing to make a lot of very quick, complex decisions at the moment. And actually, we can't do it if we're tired or if we're dehydrated. Or if we're only, you know, kind of, we're running on, you know, on kind of sugar and not healthy regular meals. So I think going right back to basics might sound completely obvious, but actually that's the foundation for everything. And if that's not in place, we actually can't move beyond that. So I think that's so much of our, I was saying to someone earlier this morning, it drives me absolutely nuts, but when I'm in a really bad mood, my husband makes me a cup of tea and brings me a sandwich. And most of the time, actually, that's what I need, even though I completely understand the theory and the practice of all of this, this focus on self-care. So often that's not what's happening practically. And I just need something very simple like that, that will kind of fuel me and on I can go. So I think so much of that sense of basic health practices are really important. And then the connections that we have with others. So not doing this on our own. Understanding that one of the hardest parts of all of this is that actually human beings are social species. And we need our tribe. We need our crew, our squad. And so often we're not seeing those people, or we're not connecting with people that really matter. So rallying our troops around us, making sure we're having those connections with people that really matter to us. And then also making sure that we've got routines and rhythms in place that are building structure into a time that is very unpredictable and unstructured. So those kind of rhythms and routines are super helpful as well. I'm going to pause there, Jason, but I think those are maybe three really important areas to focus.
Awesome shares, Karen. I particularly loved, you know, what, you know, we've heard many times, but, you know, we've got to really internalize this as entrepreneurs. You know, I know how easy it is to say yes and move on as though we've never said yes to the statement, like, I am the business's most important asset. And, you know, like, we know with things like our own car, it doesn't pay us off to try be more efficient and get there faster and run out of fuel on the way. It's far less efficient to run out of fuel than it is to just stop, put in fuel and keep going.
Yeah.
You know, but with ourselves, we tend to ignore that. And I wish I'd had, you know, taken this seriously 10 years ago, because I, you know, burnt myself out and spent 5 years being probably 10 or 20% of the contributor I should have been to the business and to my family. You know, it would have been far more efficient to do less, not burn out, and be able to do a lot more for the next 5 years. And we're going to have to lead our businesses, not for the next month, but for the next year or two through uncertainty and difficulty. And so we really are going to have to put gas in the tank. And so those are all very powerful ads, Karen. Thank you. I want to shift to the next question, because we've had a participant ask in the chat box, how do we think about managing external stakeholders through the personal challenges on our end? Some don't have the awareness or perspective that even low-level colleagues have, because they're further away in every sense. And, you know, I imagine if I just reflect on my own context, this could be, you know, perhaps a board or investors who are looking at, you know, metrics that maybe are, you know, going south and not north, and not empathetic to the personal, you know, the fact that I also have to homeschool through this and so on and so forth. How do we deal with that, Karen?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I'm sure you'll have good insights around stakeholder management, Jay, as well. But I think the most important thing is to try and actually, I think, communicate very clearly with people. So a lot of what we're working with individuals and teams is around alignment at the moment. So really bringing people into your world, and you know, laying out the context that you're operating in, and then being able to create some sense of alignment in terms of, you know, what you're working with and what's possible, and also what you need from them. I think that's a very important thing, is actually, you know, asking for help is not something that a lot of us naturally do. I think entrepreneurs are by definition incredibly autonomous and have a really strong sense of independence. That's why we became entrepreneurs for a lot of us. But actually being able to reach out and say, you know, this is what's happening. This is what I am working with. And, you know, I would really value this contribution from you on this. So bringing them into the kind of problem solving, brainstorming, you know, I think the more support we can access from people around us, the more, you know, the more is possible for us. So my sense would be really credible and clear communication, a lot of alignment, and particularly if it is sort of senior stakeholders like shareholders or, you know, global partners, I think that, you know, we all know we like it when people come to us, not with problems, but with solutions. So actually being quite deliberate around what would be valuable in terms of their contribution and how we could jointly shift this forward.
Good. Thank you, Karen. Yeah. And, you know, I think they're just, we all have those stakeholders that are more real and understanding of reality and all its complexity and messiness, and those who just aren't and are just difficult, unrealistic, unreasonable. You know, and you know, what I find always is firstly just again naming the issue is empowering. You know, not slandering the person, but internally in my own psychology, okay, I have this unreasonable stakeholder that will not care, will not understand, that will simply expect X. Okay, I've named it. So what are the possible scenarios here? If I approach them like this, how do I see that playing out? If I approach them like this, how do I see that playing out? If I see them, you know, if I approach them like this, how do I see that playing out? And personally, what I find most difficult is stakeholders where I don't see any happy endings. I just see a painful process and a painful outcome, you know, and in those circumstances, what I find most helpful is actually just mentally simulating the worst possible outcome, which is not unrealistic with often those kind of individuals that I'm thinking of, simulating in my head how it goes and just being okay with it. Like, you know, processing what would be the consequences of this. This would happen and that would happen. And, you know, processing the difficulty of what would happen. And then just finding a way to be okay with it and doing that before, you know, an engagement. And so I find that mental simulation, you know, helps me go through, you know, almost defang the monster, right? Because often the outcomes that we imagine from engaging with people like this are far worse than the actual outcomes. And not always, but you know, you can at least take away the imagined badness. So you only have to deal with the actual badness. And often we hype up the badness. So that I find helpful.
Yeah, so a way of looking at, you know, what's the worst case scenario here and can I live with that? You know, how can I live with that?
Okay, hopefully you got some useful insight tools out of those responses. Please feel free to post a follow-up question if, you know, you want to go deeper on something or if you, there's some aspect that you feel we just missed. Okay, moving on to the next most popular question in the poll. A normally crazy work pace has sped up. How do I handle this? So there's definitely overlap with the previous question, but there's also, you know, just a distinctive unmanageable speed kind of component to this question. So, Karen, what are your thoughts? And just before you get going, a reminder to just post your questions in the chat box, in the Q&A box there, if you have additional questions that you'd like us to tackle. Otherwise, we'll focus on these in the, you know, the poll.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing is, you know, it is such an interesting time because some people are saying, you know, we know that on the one hand, we're dealing with people, you know, out of work or losing jobs. And on the other hand, we're dealing with a lot of us who feel like we've never been busier and that we're always working and that we're maybe not working from home if we are, but we're kind of living at work. So I think the big lever here, Jay, is around moving away from this concept of time, which is definitely, you know, we do not have influence on how much time we have, but looking at our energy and how effective we are as we're doing things. So the concept of managing your energy, not managing your time, because obviously we only have, you know, so much time, but we are able to really, you know, flex our energy and how effective we are. And a lot of the self-care practices are important levers around that. So making sure that we are, you know, we are topped up in terms of our own energy so that we're feeling like we can really kind of get going. But it's almost paradoxical, what I'm going to say now, is that it's also massively important for us to factor in breaks so that when we are working, we're working flat out and we're able to work efficiently and effectively rather than, you know, just enduring for long periods of time. So I think being quite strategic and being able to make sure we have micro breaks, I'm not talking about, you know, a massive holiday or you know, sometimes even a whole weekend off seems impossible. But how can we make sure that, you know, we're taking, you know, a few minutes every hour, or we're taking a lunch break for a certain amount of time, or we're able to take one night off a week, or, you know, we are able to take a day off over the weekend, because that investment will really help us be more efficient and more effective, you know, with all the demands that we are having to navigate, you know, during that really sped up work time. So there's something around slowing down to go faster. And this idea about resilience not being about endurance, it's actually being about being able to build in recovery time. We know that stress is actually quite good for us. It galvanizes us, it creates new neural pathways. Where stress becomes damaging is when we don't recover from it. And as I said, that can be micro, that can be, you know, a few minutes every hour, it can be a lunch break, it can be one night off a week. It doesn't have to be whole big long stretches of time. But making sure that we have some downtime built in so that we can go really fast when we need to.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, that insight was life-changing for me. I used to, in the first probably 15 years of my career, I used to get up and start sprinting. And then somewhere late in the day, I'd stop sprinting and get into bed and wonder why I couldn't sleep. And you know, that's why I burnt myself out twice. And the insight, and was actually at what's the chap from Harvard's name at his lecture, Kieran, that I joined with you.
Tal
Ben-Shah's lecture, that the penny dropped for me, you know, when he shared the research that like the world's highest performers are actually people that routinely take breaks to recharge. You know, stress yourself to a healthy degree of stretch, you know, and then punctuate that with breaks to recharge. Like, that insight changed my life, I'd have to say, because of how unsustainably and stupidly I was managing my life. And so just this idea that it is efficient to stop and rest. Was, you know, it's highly productive to stop and rest. That was a breakthrough for me, and to take a longer view on life and say, over the course of life, I will make a bigger difference to more people, be more fulfilled if I just stop to rest. So that was a big deal for me. And for any of you on this kind of webinar that are the sprint throughout the day type, I can't recommend enough, you know, just taking that on board. Cool. So we've had another question posted here in the Q&A box. How can I dissociate the downturn in company performance with my personal performance? I feel like it's difficult for me to take the downturn in company performance, not take that personally, I guess, feeling like it reflects badly on me, to our stakeholders and others. Mm. So in comes the clinical psychologist part of me. Darren?
No, I mean, I think that's such an important question, because so often for us, especially as founders, our success and failure is so completely interwoven and interlinked with our, you know, the business. And I think this is where it's really valuable to talk, you know, around the concept of a growth mindset, and the idea that in this situation, how we deal with failure, you know. So we actually know that we need to be able to fail fast, to fail forward, to use it as a way of learning and growth. But so many of us are hardwired to actually have a deep sense of shame, and a sense of, you know, feeling not good enough if there is some kind of failure. So I think this distinction around the difference between, you know, the business is not performing versus I am not performing. And even, you know, in conversations we've had with founders and entrepreneurs whose businesses have failed, the distinction between, you know, the business has failed, not I am a failure. So I think that kind of shift in our thinking, and the idea that, in fact, you know, how have we learned through this? How have we grown through this? Yeah. How are we focusing forward through this? How will we run, you know, a better business in future because of this? So really kind of lifting ourselves out of off the dance floor and onto the balcony, almost setting a different perspective. I think is really important. And really even being able to say, so our inner dialogue around, you know, I haven't failed, the business has failed. Being able to make that sort of detachment very deliberately and very, very clearly, because I mean, when we look at rationally, when we look at successful entrepreneurs, we know that most of them have got multiple businesses that have worked, that haven't worked. The real distinction is that they've got up and they've been able to learn and kind of, you know, fail forward. So I think it's reframing and seeing, you know, that what is a possible different way of looking at the situation, which will help us to lift our own sense of confidence and sense of trust in ourselves, like out of this existing context.
Yeah. Yeah. Good, Karen. I can also relate to this question, you know, deeply. And, you know, for me, it's three words and there's quite a lot of overlap here with what Karen has said, but also some non-overlap. The three key words, which are kind of frames of reference or mindsets from which I approach this, is best effort, risk, and growth. The best effort part is, you know, just shifting the yardstick. And I was really helped by this by Coach John Wooden, you know, at least through his leadership books, where he says it's actually an irrelevant, it's a completely arbitrary and irrelevant measure of success, whether the thing we're doing lands up working out well, whether I win the basketball game, you know, in his case, it's irrelevant. What's relevant is that I give my all and do my best. That's the better yardstick of success. And that's the case for a lot of reasons. I mean, you might, in the basketball analogy, you might find yourself, you know, the bottom of the league facing the top of the league. Is losing to the top of the league, is that a failure? You know, or maybe you lost by 1 point. Isn't that a great success if you're bottom of the league facing the top of the league? So, you know, in the business context, obviously, we start businesses on the hypothesis that we can make this work. But we know statistically most businesses will not work. So does that make most entrepreneurs failures? Or I think not. So I think recognizing firstly that what's required of me is to give my best, give my all, you know, and if I can say honestly I did my best, you know, and not even the best that a perfect version of me could have done, or the best that a version of me 10 years down the line, or even now, the version of me today that has now learned all these lessons, the version of me that started that journey, that version do his best. I think, so that's number one, the yardstick being doing my best. Number two, risk, just appreciate that I could do my best and it could still fail. And that's okay. That's the nature of venturing. And so being able to dissociate, as Karen said, my performance from the venture's performance. And then the third, growth, you know, is that growth mindset of, okay, so how am I a better person because of what I've gone through, what I've learned, and how can I use that to, you know, be set up better for success in the next, you know, mission that I tackle. So those are the three things that I try and do. That does not mean the stakeholders will agree, you know, and so I guess if I were to add a fourth, you know, it's a constant journey of growth of just being happy with what I think of me as opposed to what others think of me. And if it is going to be others, at least let it be the ones that really love me and not the ones that don't. So those are the kind of tools that I've found have helped me on, you know, myriad of failures in this risky entrepreneurial journey. Any kind of adds there, Karen?
No, I mean, I do think that it's tough. And I also think that more and more people are realizing that in order to innovate and in order to really shift things forward, we really have to be able to figure out how to fail. So it is an absolutely, yeah, it's a journey we're not that comfortable, we're not skilled at working with. I think this attitude, I think it was a Nelson Mandela quote, which is like, I've never failed. I've either succeeded or I've learned. You know, so framing the learning around it, I think, is a really important way of being able to move forward with it.
Yeah. And so that's the reason I think, you know, it's so important to just establish a habit around daily checking in on, have I done my best? So at the beginning of the day, what would it look like for me to have done my best today? End of day, have I done my best? Because if I can say most days I've done my best, and again, let's not hold the standard of perfection, you know, that hammer over our head, like, most days have I done my best, you know, when failures come around, we can handle those a lot more easily, because we realize, so sometimes the best isn't enough, and that doesn't come down to me. It's not a slight on me. Last question, and then we're going to have to close out. So it's from the audience. It's difficult for me to work from home. And as a leader, I have to show up and lead the team, which involves a lot of traveling, also involves going into slums to meet my customers. Family's not happy with my exposure to these activities. I imagine there might be, you know, personal safety risk there. How do I move forward? Karen, your thoughts.
So I just want to check and understand the question. So it's not about being at, working from home. It's actually about managing the risks of not going back into the world.
That does seem to be what it's about. Yeah, it's about, it seems like it's actually more about under the circumstance where maybe the country is trying to lock down and there's, you know, need to social distance. I can't. And in fact, there are multiple dangers in that. And my family's not that excited.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very, very tough one. And in some contexts we're working in, people are going back into the office and back into work. And it is exposing a lot of concern and anxiety, you know, amongst the sort of family groupings. I mean, I think my sense would be around, again, would be around being as taking as many precautions as you can, as, you know, maintaining as many of the health practices that are being suggested as you can out there. And then also really getting your family aligned. So for them understanding, you know, your context. And getting ecosystem aligned from a communication perspective, and then taking, you know, very calculated risks in terms of exposing yourself, you know, from a health perspective. I don't know if you have anything to add, Jay.
Yeah, look, I can only resonate with this. You know, personally, I can relate well to like a mission that you really care about that requires taking on personal risk, and that's okay before you have a family. And now you have a family, and actually now you have responsibility towards loved ones. And I can relate very personally and deeply to that. I can only give two words that, you know, have helped me here. And there's those two words are, or maybe it's three, boundaries, seasons, and delegation. So the boundaries part is you got to, in the end, agree on how much risk you can take that your family can accept in light of your multifaceted responsibilities, you know, and what does that look like in practice? How many times a week can I go into what kind of spaces? So that's one, boundaries, you know, there's got to be an agreement on boundaries. So second one is seasons. I've had to personally accept that there've been seasons in my life where I could take a lot of personal risk. Now's not one of those seasons. I have a young boy and a wife that depend upon me and other, you know, dependents. And there'll be seasons in my life in future where I can take a lot more personal risk again, but I'm responsible at this point to manage down the level of personal risk I take. So that's word two, seasons. Word three, delegation. Therefore, in those seasons where I can't, I have to just live with delegating to other people who can take on that personal risk in those times. And if that means you need some kind of a general manager who is that person and is excited to be that person, you know, maybe that is what it is. And if I were to add a fourth word, it would be family growth. Maybe actually you don't find the boundaries perfectly as a family right now, but you're on a journey together of evolving how collectively you manage this kind of tension. Anyway, hopefully there's something useful in there, but we have run out of time. And so we're going to have to wind down the clock now. Emma, I'm going to hand over to you to, you know, just have any close out thoughts or notes and then we'll close out.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been incredibly useful for work and for personal life. So it's really applicable to all aspects. I love the idea of a care coach. I think that's a great idea of having someone that you're accountable, you know, that you can report back on and is got your back in that sense. And then I think really the point around it's more productive to take a break. And I think allowing yourself that time to recover and recuperate allows you to be a better leader and more productive. So I think I'll close maybe on those points just to say that this has been incredibly useful for work and for life, and thank you both for the time that you've taken to share with us today.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Karen, for bringing your immense experience and insight into the space. Really appreciate it. I'm sure that the audience has gotten a packet out of this. So thank you. Mm-hmm. And before we just dial off, just a note that again, the link to the field guide where you'll find all the kind of the articles and the tools that we've referenced, that's all there. And there's one more session like this scheduled in 2 weeks time, and that's on the topic of finding your new north in this context of high uncertainty. And so that's it from us for this week. Hope that you've gotten a lot out of this, and we'll see you in 2 weeks time.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.